It's last night, but it wasn't. It wasn't my fault. I wasn't, just wasn't aware of
it. Yeah, I
hey. Hi.
Don't these things record? I'm
going to
just fiddle around and try and fix it, so you start.
Okay. Do you have questions? Well, I was just interested, as it seems quite a clinical way of going into somebody's space. And I think that's perhaps why it feels like you're just inhabiting their space, but we don't really know much about them. They're sort of vacant and absent because we don't know who they are. And perhaps the sculptor did hide all his stuff, because you might do that as an artist, mightn't you? All your good stuff you probably put away just in case. But I suppose I was always, it's an intimate thing to do, to be in somebody's, I think when somebody, if you've ever been bereaved or something and you go into somebody's house and you're going through their belongings, there's something, whether spiritual or whatever, that you feel of that person being there. And I don't know, it just seems there's an absence of that person. And within your work, I suppose I'm looking for that person, that's their space. And does the work reflect them, or does the words reflect them? I don't know. I don't know whether you...
I think that that's certainly something that I'd like to do with the next work.
Mm-hmm.
Is either make a decision. Am I really writing about the absent person?
Mm.
Or am I going to write about the practice?
Yeah.
I think I have to choose.
Yeah. But I suppose that is your practice going in there, just using their tools. It's inhabiting their space, but it's still your work, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know if next time I would try to make something there. Mm. Or I might just simply write about being there.
I was just thinking as well, what cropped into my mind was the civil service now, where my husband works, they just desk hop. So that could be an interesting concept, that in workspaces now, in the wide open world, because everybody's working such different hours, you don't even have a place to put your things.
Mm.
So you're just hopping from a desk, and if you have a laptop, then you're not entitled to use the PCs, the stationary equipment. You have to have a specific area. And I don't know, it might be quite interesting to go into one of these sort of anonymous spaces, because that's what we're becoming in society, just like machinery. We just go in and use the tools that are there.
Mm.
So there's that sort of anonymous entity.
Yeah, I definitely like to use that kind of space as well. Mm. Yeah. Mm.
I want to ask you two things. One was about in the last sort of bit of the questioning, you were talking about this project being, it was quite fast and loose, and there was another funny word that you used. Cushy, lushy, or I don't know. I forgot.
Lurching.
That was it. I knew the sound of it, but I couldn't remember. Lurchy. And Sharon, when she introduced you, said, you know, about, I'm sure you mentioned narrative and episodic narrative. And I wonder if you could talk about this lurchy project, and it's very sort of concise and ordered and clear presentation today. Because it was beautifully, clearly presented. I mean, it was very nice the way it was dark and then went light and then faded, and you came from here to here. And it's funny that I like the order. I was kind of, you know, whether we crave that order or what's going on. So I wondered if you could talk about the narrative theme.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I may have time, I like also to ask a bit about the exercises you gave us and this other way of knowing. And they were quite kinesthetic, really, or and how that relates to knowing in our art way or in writing and making and all of that stuff.
Yeah. Well, I suppose that I was speaking to Sharon earlier on before I started work today about having a sense of where, kind of quality to the writing that I'm kind of aspiring to at the moment,
mm-hmm.
and to the films I make, like quality that's mm-hmm. sort of different from how I generally work, and it's really good to have that to aspire to.
Mm-hmm.
But Sharon, I can't remember who you quoted, but you know, we talked about the practicalities of, like, actually when it comes down to it, there's certain, like, oh, that's how I interpreted what you're saying, there's certain limits and you have to just kind of do what you can do
with the writing.
Well, yeah, with writing, with practice, full stop. Yeah, I think there's like the kind of those ideals that are always kicking around, and then there's like, what do you just have?
Mm-hmm.
It's what Rossini wrote on his Petit Mess Solennel, which I really like. And he writes, I don't know if it's music sacré or sacré music, blessed or damned, but here it is, God, and it's the best I can do.
Yeah.
This is a man who, when he found his hometown in Italy, had paid to have a statue made of him. He said, God, for that money, I've come and stood there myself. So, you know, there's something, but it is about the limit of one's own capacity, isn't it?
Yeah, so that
potential. And to use also one, you know, one can only speak as one speaks.
Thinking about, I have a job where I pop into places for half a day, and by sitting in somebody else's chair, I know how long their legs are, mm-hmm. what shape their bottom is, mm-hmm. the way that they have their computer screen, I know their physicality in it, mm-hmm. how they order their space, I get a very good idea
they
about
eat on your legs.
What are their systems of organising?
Mm.
And when people come in and see me, their first response is usually not to me, it's to their memory of the person that's in there.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, it is. But from doing that for years, I know that within that, my practice, as in the core of me, is always there, regardless of anything else that's happening around. And that's been quite interesting in terms of defining what I am and I'm about.
Hmm.
Do you, in your writings, most of the writing seemed to be about what you thought the other person was like in that space, rather than what you felt in that space?
Yeah.
Is that,
but I guess that's a way of me talking about how I felt. Yeah, I don't know, I suppose it's projection.
Yeah.
Just kind of like an experience I'm having there, and I'm kind of, because somebody's not there and I've been given permission to be in that space,
have
I'm kind of channeling that, I guess,
yeah,
a lot.
I was gonna say, psychomerizing, where you get an object and you can tell what the person's like from the object.
Oh, right, I don't know what that's called.
Madness.
But I'd say it's quite controlled though, isn't it? Because I might be quite keen to do something a bit mad in there. Do you know what I mean? You know, when you go in somewhere, it's like a sweet shop or something. If someone says, oh, you can have a free-for-all in the sweet shop, you'd hardly go in and just have a few Tic Tacs, would you? You'd want to go and, like, just...
You're
going
with diabetes.
Yeah.
Diabetes.
It's quite restrained, you know what I mean? It just feels like you're almost, it's almost contemplating. It's very respectful, I think.
So objectively, I can think that's a bit nonsense, but I've seen people do it and come up with not glaringly obvious, because... I gave a woman my grandmother's brooch. I never met my grandmother. She died years before I was born. And she told me stuff about my grandmother that I don't know. that I checked with my sister who lives in New Zealand, and I found it really interesting from the thing how you can get there. Because I would say it's madness.
I can't comment.
Oh, but actually it brings me to the idea of staging, because that's a staging, isn't it? I can do that. I may have done that. I can tell fortunes. But it's a staging. You know, I know what you know. You know what it is expected. It's an artifice. So there's something in the right, and the writing is a staging, is an artifice. This was a staging.
Yes.
Today it was very well. I was admiring its timing. Went out a little bit twice, but impeccable the rest of the time. But interestingly, one woman in the audience came and said, just before you started, came and said, I want that light turned off, it's just shining in my face. And I had to say, no, she's going to read. Move. We're not. So the staging hadn't been noticed. This was just an irritating light. It wasn't the sense, oh, there's a table, there's some papers, there's a glass of water, there's a light on.
Wasn't noticed, was it?
It's been explained.
I think it must be. I mean, we now have these chairs, the, yeah, or exactly these right things. And
There's something interesting that Emma sort of touched on, this idea of this narrativizing, and I'm particularly interested in this at the moment because I'm writing it myself, and there's this kind of sort of scientific or pseudo-scientific idea of one kind of method, materials, experiment, results, reflection, and it kind of works, and that's how science kind of that's how science reports, it kind of gets rid of any kind of hints of intuition that there's been a guesswork or creativity. And a few of us have been reading some texts recently about intuition in science and more rational approaches in art, and we're kind of scared to admit the other. And I wondered because it seems that the five models that you had, or the five case studies you presented, were all presented in the same way, the same timings, and you want to here and read that, and you go up there, and then we do next. It's they're made more similar than they were, and they were. I would be interested to know that this corralling them into a kind of machine that has these stages, what you lose and what you gain. I mean, obviously it's a decision. You could have just stood and showed the image and just kind of reflected live, if you like, rather than the kind of, or read a bit and then reflected live. And I wonder if you could talk about that relationship, sort of that rigor and a sort of more fast and loose kind of, or more intuitive approach, because obviously there's both. And I asked about how you approach the people, and obviously that's a bit more intuitive. You kind of like them, or you know them, or you. It's less rigorous that it is presented, which is fine. But could you?
Well, I've sort of shared these studies in different ways. Today, because I knew it was going to be an hour lecture to a relatively big group of people, I found that intimidating, so decided quite early on, maybe a month ago, that I wanted to have a structure that was tight for me. Yeah, so it was about me managing my own anxiety about doing a lecture. So I made the decision. The lecture started off in a very different way than as I've presented it today. So it started off opening with a lot of stuff about Donald Winnicott and a lot of stuff about Hannah Arendt, which I removed because there wasn't time, actually, as I rehearsed the lecture, to do all that. You know, so there's a lot of things that I was interested in about the framing of this lecture, and how that sparked a lot of connections back, you know, to Winnicott, which I'm reading at the moment. And then, and then that kind of flowed into the studies, and it was just, the whole thing was too big and too vast. And I also felt, interestingly, that what I'd written was very much, like, I did it a little bit today and I regret it, was trying to stitch in sort of these quotations into what were actually just my reflections on what I'd done. And what happened. And so what I did over the course of preparing for this, of redrafting again and again, and sort of rehearsing again and again, was eventually just, I suppose, is finding my feet more and stripping out more and more of other authors' material, basically. Stripping out and just thinking, well, that's actually what I think happened. And sort of trying to give more space to that. And that's, so it's been a kind of, and so in a sense you're seeing it as quite structured and ordered, and that's just a means of me feeling kind of safe enough to deliver the material, having that. But I think it would make really a much better lecture to loosen that up and to kind of build in this kind of lurchiness. Like as soon as we got started talking about that, I thought it'd be much better if I could make the lecture more lurchy and capture that. That's the way that the work evolved. But, you know, with hindsight...
I wasn't saying it was better. I mean, I enjoyed it, and it was just a... I just wondered about it.
Mm-hmm. And a sort of strict structure actually acts as a yardstick to show the differences.
Something that I'm really keen on is that people know when they're getting near the end. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's really important and really, like, you know, respectful. If you can do that, put something in that says we're nearly at the end, especially with performance work, you know, somehow make it clear that we're like, well, you know where you are, and with like durational film video, you know where you are within the work, so that the audience, the viewer, the participant is orientated within the piece. They know where they are, and that works in your favour if you're interested in narrative, if you're interested in the way that story infiltrates our observations, a way of being, you know. I think then you need to start thinking about flagging up where you are in the thing. And one way of doing that, if you're not actually telling using traditional story structures, you know, to organise whatever material you have, then I think, you know, numbering, A, B, C, D, you know, 1, 2 to 5, I think for me is just like, that's all I can do, you know.
It's also like the analytic hour, which is 50 minutes.
Yeah.
And you know, the way that the analyst signals, the therapist signals the end of the time. But this is precisely what Lacan tried to work against, that the session could end at any time, because full speech always comes unprepared.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because we were just saying that the question's always hot up just before the thing's finishing, and I believe it's because people know that
we're
finishing.
It's what happens in analysis as well. The analysis, and that's when usually someone starts to speak, because they know, God, 50 minutes is up, so I better get it in now.
Yeah.
But that's why Lacanians practice variable sessions, because if you don't know when it's going to end, might speak more fully.
I think it's a different reason for knowing it's going to end, but you might sort of get it in, rather than because you can drop something in like that, because she knows that not getting it in, but the time to be interrogated with it is less. And therefore there's less risk of putting something in mind.
The consequences as well. You know, we're... are going to be limited if you're only going to be in the room with somebody for like, you know.
Everyone knows that it's going to end by 5:45. It might extend by 5 minutes. Very rarely does it go on beyond that. Yet at 22, every single fucking week, people leave just before the end. So there's some kind of what's being produced in the room about not wanting to come to the conclusion, the resolution, the tying up, which is where narrative might lead us.
Absolutely.
Or certainly genre does, but...
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
That's the point of genre fiction, isn't it?
Yeah, to give that pleasure.
To give the pleasure of an ending.
Can I just ask, why did you elect to leave the first study out? Or was that a time issue?
Well, it didn't feel like I'd done it properly, you know. Like, not that any of them were done properly, but that, like, definitely wasn't done properly.
Would that not have been more lurching than the subsequent studies?
Yeah. Again, but I suppose I left the writing one in because it felt like I really needed to show that, to show what happened, or what happened. But it... I don't know. I suppose I'm making an evaluation. Some of them are just don't have anything. I've shown you the ones that I think have something to reflect on.
But do you think if you go back and repeat it, like you've said, these are the workspaces, do you think it'll lose an element of that big sort of excitedness of a fresh start, because you sort of go in there with preconceived ideas of what you want to get out of it?
Yeah, I am. I don't know what's going to happen, really, but I do think that I'm going in there with particular... Wherever I go, I know that it'll be based on the kind of feedback I've had to these works so far, and also on... I have a particular thing that I want to write, so there's more sense, if I do these again, there's a stronger sense that I'm going to be using the situation in a particular way to generate a particular kind of writing, I think. So it's not, it won't be, like, it won't, you know, it's sort of like, it becomes more of a, like, a method, or, you know, and I guess there's more potential for me exploiting things, but that's fine, because I think the situation, I'll know how to manage them better, and I certainly, it will, I've got to be clear if it's about the absence of the person or not. There's things that I need to do, just get clear about before I do it, because I know what I want to write, but like
so. Is that a way of playing this back into your practice, of owning this and saying, actually, I'm going to manage my intervention there, rather than saying what happens? You're trying to, in an interesting way, in the light of these kind of gestures that you've done, which are kind of maybe intuitive and you don't really know how it's going to go, on reflection, you say coming back to your practice, and it feels like a sense of loss, but we're trying to take some of the recover some of the excitement of this, of these interventions, these inhabitations, but actually overlay it with a kind of a more kind of purposeful, which is your voice in a way. The writing is your voice, and you're kind of moving that to the front, really, rather than the empiricism.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's like what I'm going to do. But I think that the other thing to just say is that I always have like grand plans for the work. And what I do know now from doing this and doing lots of other projects is that I really have to go with what I'm given, like, actually, and I can only really do certain things, and the kind of the planning, the grand plan and ambition for the work for me is about a kind of it's about getting me up into the air, in the sense of like jumping on a trampette, you know. It's like the plan is like the trampette that gets me up and in to the into nothing, into like, and so like once I'm up there, I can like, it's sort of easier for me to see what I need, what can I do, what can I write, what's there, what's available to me. Yeah, you become a bit more like of an opportunist up in the air, and that's what I like, actually. I like the experience of that. But, like, getting there is quite... You know, I sort of need loads of plans and visions of what I want. But, like, in reality, that isn't ever what I deliver. I don't know. I don't know if that makes sense to anybody.
Absolutely.
But that, it definitely isn't what I deliver. So I've got to just, like... You know, going back to Sharon's point, it has to be a rude awakening at some point. But not right now, because I'm just planning it. No.
What is the writing that you are like aspiring to write? Can you say it, or is it not possible?
No, I can tell you who I'm interested. What kind of writing I'm interested in?
The thing that you are like, this thing that you're talking about that you want to do.
Well, Calvino writes about something called like the hypothetical bookshelf. And that, like, if you want to write, which, like, I don't want to just write, I want to make films as well, but, like, the same applies to films, that you know, that there's, like, a hypothetical kind of bookshelf in your mind, and you want to write the book that sits between those other books. And he uses this in order to elaborate the idea of audience. Who do you write for? Well, maybe you don't write for anybody, maybe you write into a gap, you know, between other publications or other artworks or other films. You're sort of hitting a gap between things. So I suppose for me, rather ambitiously, I'm like hitting a gap between sort of George Perec, Fernando Pessoa, Lydia Davis,
there's something of Borges in the author of the Quixote piece. And then you may end up making a perfect replica of the piece of work that's going to be made there anyway. because you're in the right situation.
Yeah, maybe. I suppose. But you know, like there's sort of particular people, and I'm just sort of ignited by their work, and so it's a bit like trying to. I sort of reading Ben Marcus's work, who wrote Flame Alphabet, has just got a new collection of short pieces out, and like that is like not really. It's not like I'm not like interested in emulating that, but there's something between Ben Marcus and David Foster Wallace that's completely out of my grasp. But you know, if you put all these people together, there's like a kind of a sort of a areas in between these things that I'm kind of, I don't know, I'm not gonna write anything as good as that, but I'm just like, you know, something in there that I'm looking for.
And is this when something touches you?
Yeah.
So it's about, yes, being moved, touched.
Yeah, very much so. And also, like, I think that there's something about some pieces of writing which I think is more difficult to get close to with filmmaking, of like some kinds of writing, there's like a strange objectivity to it, but a candor to it that it's difficult to do in other forms. It can be sort of, it's like a strange distance and closeness at the same time, and that I can't really talk about in theoretical, you know, I can't really sort of talk about it in literary terms, I mean, but there's something about that, something that's sort of cold but close, that I'm interested in. Flat, we talked about flatness as well.
So, I think Perret does that in a lot of the works.
Yeah,
Perret. You know, by the applying application of the system,
yeah.
And yet there's still an emotive response within the system, because you have to recognise it, and thus identification happens.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have to say, for my part, I'm not so interested in systems and organising and, you know, those kind of categorising stuff that he's... But there's something that the effect that has on me, like I do sort of feel like that I want to generate that, you know, as a response to the work, but I can't do it the way he does it. So, I don't know, it's quite a big challenge anyway.
And how does film do it?
Probably through duration. Yeah. Which is interesting, because again, we were speaking about that earlier on, but yeah, I think through duration.
Not image. Not visuals. Duration is more important than the image.
It can be, yeah.
Yeah. The duration of the image, I suppose. Yeah, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know, like I don't really make films like that, to be honest, but
like what?
Well, that use duration.
What would that be?
Like something that's kind of like, I don't know, like Warhol-esque, you know, like a kind of long held portrait or whatever, something where you see the difficulty of the time and the sort of, well, they're particularly interesting because of the disintegration of the person over time, but I can't remember the name of the film. Chantal Ackerman.
Which one?
Jean Dillemont. That's Chantal Ackerman, isn't it? Yeah. So that, I guess that's an example. It's like cold, you know, but.
Godard.
Yes, also Godard.
Bresson.
I haven't seen enough to comment. No, to say, I couldn't say.
This Ligeti that you played at the end made me think of Last Year of Marienbad.
Oh yeah, of course, yeah. So yeah, I wanted.
Where time and narrative are playing against each other.
Yeah.
In the reconstruction of events that never happened, so ideas of tense.
Yeah, that is very interesting. Yeah. Tense.
Which seems to.
Yeah,
because we're here in the now of the reading, but it's something that's been written and exists already.
Yeah,
and can be read. that goes back to an event that happened.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's again something else I'm sort of struggling with my writing. Yeah. Or thinking about it.
I just want to ask, because you've got a lot about writing now, with your work, the project you did how does it sit together? The writing seems to be more important, producing that piece of writing and focusing on the other bit, which is the more practical practice.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose my approach to writing over the last few years has been, I used to write screenplays, and my approach to writing over the last maybe 7 years has been to only write when I want to write, when I have something to write about. And I guess my main excitement with this very first sort of borrowing thing that happened was just because I immediately felt, after leaving my friend's studio, that I had absolutely loads to write about. I didn't immediately think, what a great painting I've made. I just left and went, a lot was flowing, a lot of phrases, a lot of, I was immediately I just, I knew I can go and write now. I've got something to say. And it immediately occurred to me what I'd done, not I'd done anything amazing, but to me I'd sort of done something had clicked, I'd done something that I could do again. I don't know how that penny drops, but that I knew something instinctively that I had a lot to say about what I'd done that afternoon.
Is that the finding of material?
I guess it is, yeah.
Stuff turns on.
Yeah, just oh. Mm. As opposed to having nothing to say.
That would be interesting to take that into other aspects other than art practice, other working environments, perhaps.
How do you mean?
Because that gave you something to write, that ignited something. If you're going into completely alien spaces of work, of labour, of where people spend a lot of time, that could, ignite something else. But equally as inspiring and take you on another journey with your writing, perhaps. It's just a question. Might not. Might be. Because the art space is perhaps quite a safe environment in a way, because you know really what the parameters are, even though the sculptor maybe have been a little bit uncomfortable, whereas other working environments may not be as comfortable, but you could evoke more equally exciting narratives and exciting conclusions, perhaps. I don't know.
Well, there are writers in residence in offices. There's a law firm who had regularly paid for a writer in residence. Lavinia Greenlaw was one of their first people to do them. You get the sense that someone who comes from something, another discipline, doing something else, create something that enriches the way that one might live. But I think one has to be a bit careful about that, because it's we've got mindfulness workshops and yoga and singing in the workplace being brought in the university. And I said rather nastily in committee meeting, I think perhaps if we were just paid decently, we wouldn't need any of that. But there's a sense of what. So not coming in necessarily as therapeutic, but in a way that's used reflectively.
He was there and he talked to him. And he felt that he couldn't write anything bad. And that his usual kind of sarcastic edge he couldn't put in. because of being a guest.
Of being a guest, but also representing the institution.
Whereas I think Sarah's work kind of undoes the laws of hospitality.
Oh dear, yeah.
I think perhaps the one that you felt most comfortable with was the one where all of the your choice was taken away, where you were kind of made most hospitable, and that was the first painter's the painter's cupboard.
Yeah.
Because you had no choice. And you couldn't even make decisions because you couldn't see, you couldn't move your chair to a different place. You were very strict limitations, but she'd given you free rein within that really defined boundary.
Yes, and the, or the cupboard, you know, get in the cupboard.
Yeah, get in the cupboard.
Like, this is really holding, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's really holding, and it's a space that is safe.
Yeah.
I did nothing but follow her practice.
Well, I guess I could have done something different, but I didn't really want to.
No.
Because I was, like, caught up in her... Like, it was like the whole thing was a gift. Mm. You know, it was like... You go in. Go in, and you do it. You know, and so it was like it, the whole gesture of it. Like, I didn't want to do... I didn't want to, like, do anything else.
But when you went into the sculptor's studio... can't touch any of these things, but you've got all this space to move around, and you've got to make choices about the things that actually you can't make a choice about. You can't choose to use that or that or that. It was limited, but not limited to what he had.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just like you know, I ended up not feeling that great in there, and it's like I feel like it's my that was a result of how the thing was set up. So there's like lots of little things, you know, regarding the negotiation of that should have been different. And so I feel okay about using the material because it's like fine, you know. But at the same time, you know, the outcome reflects, you know, how the thing took flight. So.
But there'd be something strange about going into that sculpture studio if there was all that lovely material that you were half expecting or anticipating, and they sort of just say, here they are, see you in an hour, and you sit there thinking, can I actually do what I like? And there's a self-imposed restriction. I mean, you have to feel pretty confident to actually take the really large piece of whatever and bolt it to the other really large piece and then set fire to it.
Yeah, well, I didn't know it was going to be an hour for a start off, so I just arrived.
Yeah. But I mean, him saying you could only use the scrap, in a way, there is a kind of, it seems mean or uncooperative, but actually it's quite generous because they're saying, this is the boundary, you're as free as you like within the boundary. Because if they said, you can do what you like,
yeah,
would you have gone, you don't actually mean that because I could just steal everything, and you said it would be all right. Because you said I could do what I like, and there's a kind of vagueness in that generosity, in that seeming generosity, there's a paradox in there, which he didn't allow you to have. He went the other way and said, I'll be back in an hour, it's going to look like this, and you can't use anything that's not scrap. But in a way, that gives you a box to work within, that, and you're free within the box.
Yeah.
I mean, it's different. I mean, it's not, you know.
But I think it just shows the way that it's not really about the conditions in the end. There's something that I'm picking up about, like, whether I'm welcome or not. Really.
Yeah, that's
yeah, so I think this is why it's like about the work itself. If I've reflected on it with groups of people, it's become very clear that, you know, with other practitioners, that the work itself is about maybe five or six things going on, and actually you could do with getting rid of half of those and just really concentrating on maybe one aspect. You know, I just need to be clearer.
Has it changed how you feel more around the studio, and would you let someone into your studio?
Well, I've just been thrown out of my studio, so I've got to go and get another one.
Why? What did you do?
I know, what did I do?
Sat in everyone's space.
Yeah, sat in everybody else's space. Actually, no, it's a sublet, so there you go. It's a sublet. So not quite thrown out, but a bit thrown out as kind of politics around the studio. So I don't think I would feel comfortable lending my computer to somebody else that I write on, but I would feel comfortable lending somebody books, lending somebody my workspace. Yeah, I think I'd be fine with it, because I lend my books quite a lot, and I don't really talk about my practice that much, but the whole action of teaching is somehow connected with this work as well. Like, there's something, again, it's a whole other set of notes to make, but there's some connection between my teaching practice and my experience there, and sharing something, or in involving myself with other practices in a way. I don't know, but yeah, I don't think I'd want to. I don't think I'd want to offer up like my notebook. Mm-hmm. I'll put it that way. But I probably would offer up my tools, as it were.
I think we'll end there, because Sarah's got to get a train back to Glasgow. So thank you, Lizzie and Emma. Thank you very much, Sarah.
Thank you.
It's been a very long day. Thank you for your generosity.
Thanks, Sharon.
Thank you.
Thanks. So you've been the perfect guest.
Ah, great. Thanks.
I really like it when people prepare a talk for us as well. I have to fight back, hostily, when their people are faffing around going through their website.
Oh no, yeah.
It's because I can't say what it is. I love
refreshing.
Is that yours?
Yes, not the only one.
The epileptic fit.
Is that yours?
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.